Hey guys, it's James.
And Samuel.
And before we get into this week's Week in Anjo,
we'd like to just kind of say that we're actually sitting next to each other again.
Yes, big news on that. We are, for now, not out of town, but this coming week, just for the work week, I'm going to be in Atlanta for more training. So the coming up rabbit hole is going to be fucky yet again. I'm going to be out of town for the coming up rabbit hole, but next week's Week in Anjo, we should be good. Also tomorrow, because I'm in town and we have more time to actually do shit, tomorrow we're going to try and get a super special anniversary episode of A Week in Anjo, because the 22nd, actually last week, the 22nd marked a full year of anarcho-journalism as a group. And that's my baby. I want to celebrate. We're going to cover the first however many articles that were posted in that group. So that'll be fun.
Should be a really fun time.
Yeah. So also, we are working with a little bit of reformatting right now.
Yeah, so we're not quite going chronological. There'll still be articles all throughout the week. This one from, what is it, the 20th to the 26th?
Yeah.
So it'll all be within that week, but instead of going chronological day by day, because like usually our old format, we'd try to grab two articles per day. Well, instead of doing that, because some days are higher volume than others, and also sometimes articles flow really well together, but they're on separate days, so we can't really lump them together.
Kind of makes the story a little choppy when we do that.
Yeah, so instead of looking at it day by day, we'll be looking at it for the whole week, and basically just trying to pull our typical 16 articles from the week, and ordering them in such a way that they flow. So
whatever makes the most sense.
Yeah. So this will be the first time doing that. So if you notice, you know, hey, the days are kind of jumping all over the place. That's why. So we'll still be reading out, you know, who posted, when they posted, but it just won't be in chronological order so that the articles can flow a little bit.
Yeah, it's no longer going to go day by day from Saturday through Friday. It's going to go whenever the fuck we want, in whatever order we want, but we will tell you what days each article was posted.
Yeah.
So we will start with that new format starting now. Samuel, if you'll read us off.
So this first one was posted by Ryan Bauer on Sunday, July 21st. And the headline is, Police fire tear gas at protesters demanding Puerto Rico governor's resignation. Protests demanding the immediate resignation of Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo A. Rosello erupted for a third day Monday night with police and riot gear creating a human barricade outside of the governor's mansion and launching tear gas and pepper spray into the crowd. Demonstrations began after hundreds of pages from a private group chat between the 40-year-old governor and nine confidants leaked Saturday, exposing what news reports say was a profanity-riddled conversation. The newest scandal, which has been called Chatgate or Ricky Leaks, very clever names.
I like that. Not so big on Chatgate, but Ricky Leaks.
Ricky Leaks.
That's where it's at.
Led several government officials to pull their support for Rosello, and comes days after the FBI arrested two former officials on corruption charges for the misuse of $15.5 million in federal funding between 2017 and 2019. So things are heating up in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Which is good to see. It's good to see people taking a stand between the Yellow Vest movement, between Puerto Rico and Hong Kong. It's good to see. I wish it would happen here. Like, instead of like a small scale riot that just dies, I would like to see a full scale protest.
Instead of just raiding Area 51, you bunch of sacks of shit.
Like, get together and raid something meaningful.
The rest of the world is on this shit. What is taking America so damn long? We haven't had a good revolution in almost 300 years. Like, get on it.
Exactly.
Fuck the government and fuck the police.
All right. Next article is posted by Jason Booth on Wednesday, July 24th. This is John McAfee released from confinement. So John McAfee has been released Wednesday after apparently going missing earlier this week, according to a tweet. Operating his Twitter account Tuesday, his campaign manager, Rob Benedicto Pacifico, Juan Maria, that's a long
words.
Name.
Fucking words, man.
Said McAfee had been detained by authorities.
How dare you have a paragraph as a name? That's not okay.
Okay, it's Rob Benedicto Pacifico Juan Maria Loggia Ramirez.
Bless you.
The antivirus software pioneer has been on the run since 2012 after his alleged involvement in a murder in Belize, which he denies. Data hidden across the world by the 2020 presidential candidate and maker of an unhackable cryptocurrency wallet would have been revealed if he remained detained, the series of tweets this week said. So he basically had a bit of a Julian Assange thing going on, like, arrest me, see what happens.
Yeah. Try me, bitch.
And it's funny because there actually was a dump when Assange was arrested.
Yeah.
It's great. So McAfee was arrested by the Dominican Republic Armed Forces while docking his yacht in Puerto Plata, AP reported Wednesday afternoon.
Goddamn Dominicans. Leanne, if you're listening, fuck Dominicans.
Multiple high-caliber weapons as well as ammunition were seized during the arrest, AP said. On July 19th, McAfee had tweeted a picture of himself and his wife holding guns on his yacht. John, Janice, and his crew are alive and in the process of being released from confinement, Logia Ramirez tweeted from McAfee's account Wednesday, adding that McAfee himself would tweet more details Thursday. McAfee then tweeted a series of pictures of himself leaving detention after 4 days of confinement.
Goddamn.
So I didn't realize that McAfee, like the creator of McAfee Antivirus, was such a hard ass.
Yeah, he's...
I didn't know anything about him.
That man is a badass.
Like,
now,
all I know is that I have the default, you know, McAfee virus, like antivirus, on my computer and that it pops up every other day for a bullshit little minimal scam that I don't care about. That's all I knew. I didn't know that this guy was like all about guns, cocaine, and hookers and allegedly killing people in Belize.
Right? Yeah, McAfee antivirus gives the guy a bad rap. He's actually a great, great crazy man. I love him. I'm not too big on the whole 2020 presidential campaign shit. I couldn't care less about presidential candidates, but he's a crazy badass. He's great.
Yeah, he's like Ron Paul 2.0, but like completely unrefined.
Yeah, that is Ron Paul 2,
like
raw.
Alright, so moving forward, our next four articles, again, this is one of the reasons I wanted to do this, they flow really well together. So this first one was posted by Ryan Bauer on Monday, July 22nd. The headline is, Trump administration plans to expand its power to quickly deport undocumented immigrants. The Trump administration will significantly expand its power Tuesday to quickly deport undocumented immigrants who have illegally entered the United States within the past 2 years, using a fast-track deportation process that bypasses immigration judges. Officials are calling the new strategy, which will take effect immediately, a, quote, necessary response to the influx of Central Americans and others at the southern border. It will allow immigration authorities to quickly remove immigrants from anywhere they encounter them across the United States, and they expect the approach will help alleviate the nation's immigration court backlog and free up space in immigration and customs enforcement jails.
That sounds like they're using the Honduras caravan boogeyman again.
Yeah, what they're doing is trying to keep people from actually being able to be represented in court before their deportation.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, pick you up, you can't prove you've been here for 2 years, gone.
You're brown and your name is hard to pronounce. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Your name is a paragraph.
So the stated targets of the change are people who sneaked into the United States and do not have an asylum case or immigration court date pending. Previously, the administration's policy for expedited removal had been limited to migrants caught within 100 miles of the U.S. border who had been in the country for less than 2 weeks. The new rule would apply to immigrants anywhere in the United States who have been in the country for less than 2 years. Adhering to a time limit included in the 1996 federal law that authorized the expedited process. Immigration lawyers said that the expansion is unprecedented and effectively gives the U.S. or U.S. agents the power to issue deportation orders without bringing immigrants before a judge or allowing them to speak to a lawyer. So, I have a quote, under this unlawful plan, immigrants who have lived here for years would be deported with less due process than people get in traffic court, Omar Jadwat, director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Immigrants' Rights Project, said in a statement. What the fuck is with these long-ass names? Jesus fucking Christ. He also follows up with, we will sue to end this policy quickly. So shit's getting a little rough with this, and you'll see just how bad it's getting a little further down.
Yeah, that's
but
that's
this
just,
is like the initiation.
That's them starting to get open about what they intend to do. They're trying to save face for the public, for the media. They're trying to look like they're trying to do something good. But the next couple articles we got,
it shows how it's already fucking up.
Yeah, let's get to it.
All right, next one was posted by Ryan Bauer on Friday, July 26th. Headline is, Trump administration moves to speed up deportations with the expedited removal expansion. So the Trump administration announced on Monday it is expanding fast-track deportation regulations to include the removal of undocumented immigrants who cannot prove they have been in the U.S. continuously for 2 years or more. The change dramatically expands the ability of the Department of Homeland Security to quickly deport certain immigrants without any of the due process protections granted to most other people, including the right to an attorney and to a hearing before a judge. It is set to go into effect Tuesday and is the latest escalation of the Trump administration's immigration crackdown. You have a quote, "We plan on challenging the change speedily." Anand Balakrishnan, I'm sorry.
More senior weird staff, names.
Senior staff attorney for the ACLU's Immigration Rights Project told NPR. Balakrishnan called the policy shift, quote, extremely sweeping, and said it authorizes any Customs and Border Protection officer to determine whether a person has been in the U.S. the requisite amount of time to trigger legal proceedings. The only way out of that is for the person to affirmatively prove that they've been here for 2 years or more. To have that evidence on them at all times, he said, it puts the burden on every non-citizen to prove their continuous presence. He noted deportations could happen within hours of a person's arrest. Quote, from what we know about the way expedited removals have been administered in the past, it's been rife with errors, Balakrishnan said. U.S. citizens have been ordered deported, and in other cases, people who have lived in the country for more than a decade have also been ejected, he said.
So that last bit there is important for the next two coming articles.
Yes.
People that have lived here for a while, or
U.S. citizens.
Or just being kicked out without question. It's like, that is key to the next two articles we've got. And it really shows how, while the government is trying to crack down on immigration and really get tough with them and all this bullshit, the next two articles shows what the government really intends to do.
Yes. So this one was posted by myself on Friday, July 26th. The headline is, the 18-year-old U.S. citizen detained for 23 days by border officials said conditions were so bad that he almost requested deportation. So, Francisco Irwin Galicia, the U.S. citizen mistakenly detained by border officials for over 3 weeks, told the Dallas Morning News on Wednesday that conditions in federal custody were so bad that he almost requested to be deported. Galicia, 18, a high school student born in Dallas, was detained after a day out with friends on June 27th when officials at a Customs and Border Protection checkpoint questioned the validity of his legal documents, according to the news. CBP detained him for about 3 weeks, then transferred him to an Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in Pearsall, Texas, the newspaper reported. Galicia has described the conditions in CBP detention as inhumane. Here's what he told the news on Wednesday. He was given insufficient food, losing 26 pounds during his detention. He wasn't allowed to shower, leaving his skin dry and dirty. And in parentheses, it's not clear if he wasn't allowed to shower at all or permitted to shower only a few times. He was crammed into an overcrowded holding area with 60 other men. They slept on the floor and were given only aluminum foil blankets as cover. Some men slept on the bathroom floor. Some were bitten by ticks and some were very sick, but many were afraid to ask to see a doctor because CBP officers said that if they did, their detention at the facility would restart. He said he was also denied access to a phone while in CBP custody, so he couldn't call his family, his mother told the news. He regained that access after being transferred to the ICE facility, she said. So this is right here is like a Dallas native.
Yeah.
I believe it was Dallas that he was born.
Yeah, I said born in Dallas.
Yep, he's
and
a Dallas native.
From the looks of it, born and raised. He is just as American as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And They're cracking down on immigration and all this shit. So what's the first thing they're going to look for? He's brown. Mm-hmm. That's all they gave a shit about. He's brown and probably speaks Spanish. And
well,
that's,
that was what his lawyer was saying. Is this is just a case of racial profiling.
Yeah.
And discrimination.
That's all it is.
Like, you see a Hispanic person. Well, time to detain him. Because, yeah. In the article it said that he gave both his social security, I think it was his social security number, his driver's license, and his birth certificate. He had all of that on him. And they just deemed it was all fake.
And see, that's crazy. That's crazy that he feels the need to have those papers on him at any time.
And clearly it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
He had his literal birth certificate and social security card, and that wasn't enough. They were just like, oh, nope, that's fake, and then they detained him.
These are legitimate government documents. How are you going to sit here and tell me they're fake? But it just shows they do not give a shit about their due process. They don't give a shit about the actual laws or any of the actual rules and shit. This is all an excuse to overhype racism. This is literally what happened in Nazi Germany with the Jews. It's like, oh, you're Jewish? Well, you're going to a concentration camp now. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're brown and speak Spanish? You're going to a detention center, which is effectively still a concentration camp.
Let's not argue semantics.
Yeah, let's not argue Semites with this.
Yes.
But, so that's one case.
So, yeah, further on, Ryan Bauer posted this one on Friday, July 26th, and it is immigration officials snatch 9-year-old U.S. citizen heading to school and hold her for 2 days. A 9-year-old American citizen on her way to school was apprehended by U.S. immigration officials and detained for some 32 hours before she was released back to her family. Federal officials said later that the girl, who was carrying a U.S. passport card with her, gave, quote, inconsistent information.
Why should we live in a world where a 9-year-old has to carry their passport?
And, defend their citizenship.
Right?
So she said, quote, I was scared. I didn't have my mom or my brother. I was completely by myself. Julia Isabel Amparo Medina told NBC 7 TV in San Diego. They finally released her Tuesday evening after about 32 hours. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said in a statement that the girl, whom they confirmed is an American citizen, quote, provided inconsistent information during her inspection, unquote, which they didn't elaborate.
She was 9 years old.
Yeah, which is why they didn't fucking elaborate. She was taken into custody so officers could, quote, perform due diligence in confirming her identity and citizenship, according to the statement.
She's 9 years old!
Yeah. Officials had no explanation for why the process took 32 hours or why the 9-year-old was in custody the entire time. Medina's brother, who is also a U.S. citizen, said officials initially accused him of human trafficking and demanded he sign a paper saying that his sister was really his cousin. Quote, he was told that he would be taken to jail and they were going to charge him for human trafficking and sex trafficking, unquote, Julia's mom, Thelma Galaxia, told NBC.
It's bullshit that we live in a world where you have to prove that you live somewhere.
I mean, yeah, and this is I know that everybody always, refers to it, but this is a very Orwellian thing.
It is. It hurts that this is the world we live in.
Mm-hmm. Is getting bad.
In Anarchy Land, all you have to do to prove you live somewhere is be somewhere and be alive.
Yeah, you just had this 9-year-old girl that was just on the way to school, not hurting anybody, not... going to school. And she was snatched up by, federal enforcers and detained for 32 hours. Because, we got to make sure... And the fucked up part is with this added, expedited deporting... She could have been deported before they even fucking confirmed her citizenship.
And then she could have been in a foreign country with nobody to contact. She mm-hmm. would have gotten trafficked.
Yeah.
This exact thing they're trying to say that her brother was totally doing, mm-hmm. she would have gotten trafficked. No doubt. Yeah. Or at least homeless in some way. She would have been severely fucked up. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, as we saw in the last article, there have been U.S. citizens that have been deported.
Yeah.
Actual U.S. citizens. Deported.
It makes no fucking sense.
No, it doesn't. It's
this whole thing, we've said it before. If you ever wondered how you would react if you lived in Nazi Germany in its peak, how are you reacting right now? Because that is how you would have reacted back then.
Yeah, because this is what we're building to.
You don't see the bullshit when you're in it. You see it looking back. Right now, we are in effectively the rise of the Fourth Reich.
I mean, yeah, because you can see the demonization. Like, the Mexicans are Trump's Jew.
They're the boogeyman.
They're the boogeyman. They're being blamed for the country's problems. They are being demonized and dehumanized. And we're at the point where they're going around the country trying to round them up and throw them into detention centers. And it's like, yeah, they're not death camps, but...
I mean, we covered...
I
don't remember if it was last week or the week before, but we covered one article where they said that they were going to start just random raids to mm-hmm. find them. They were going to go door to door to find illegal immigrants and get rid of them.
Because it's totally that big of a deal. No, it's Trump's scapegoat.
Yeah.
It's Trump's Jew. Like, it's what he's using to blame the faults of the country on so that he can redirect that blame. So that he can say, no, it's not me. Like, it's not the tariffs that caused you to lose your job. It's those damn dirty Mexicans. Like,
it's not...
That's all this is.
It's not my fault that, you know, we don't have sufficient taxes for all these things. It's not my fault we're upping taxes on stuff. It's because we have these damn Mexicans that are taking all of it.
Yeah,
no.
You didn't lose your job because the business went out of business because of the tariffs. No, it's totally because a Mexican stole your job.
Yeah. No. First off, taxation is theft. Second off, what right do you have to say that someone should or should not live here?
Yeah, like, nobody... Like,
that's some fucking socialist bullshit.
There's a very popular quote, and I love it, and it's, your right to restrict migration begins and ends at your property line.
Yeah.
So whatever land you own, you can restrict migration.
Yeah.
If you don't own it, fuck off. It's not your call.
And it kills me, because there's... used to work with the guy, Tommy. He was someone I worked with at my previous jobs here in Georgia, where Mexican immigrants basically don't exist. This guy is super conservative, like would suck Trump's dick. Super conservative, mind you, in Georgia. And his constant moan and groan was, those damn dirty illegals are stealing my job and stealing my taxes. And okay. They haven't stolen your job. You have had this job for several years. They're not taking your job. And other jobs that they are taking don't belong to you because you're not working with it. That's not where you work. You have nothing to do with the employer. That's not your job.
Well, chances are you wouldn't do that job in the first place.
Right? Like, if...
Why do you think that, you know, California's farm agricultural industry, like, was... scrambling trying to get workers when they cracked down on illegals working in California?
Yeah, because no one there wanted to do it. Nobody there wanted to do agricultural work. The Mexicans, legal or otherwise, they funneled it
and filled the gap.
Yeah, they came in. That was work that they were willing to do for whatever it paid. And it was work that needed to be done. Whatever job there is, there's always someone willing to do it. Do not crack down on that. You'll fuck up the industry. That fucks up the economy. And sure enough, it fucks up people's diets.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the reasons I love Mexicans, is because they come in and then they're more than willing to, like, bust their ass to do these jobs that other people don't want to
yeah.
do. Like, they're fully willing to, and they'll fucking excel at it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're a very hardworking people, and we need them.
And I'm not necessarily going to say take advantage of that. And
no, it's just like, welcome them in.
Slave drive them. But
don't get rid of them.
If there's work to be done, don't tell someone not to do it. It's absolute bullshit that they are trying to crack down on illegal immigrants, and within just not even a month of them doing this, they've already cracked down on two legal American citizens who happen to be brown in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yep.
Like, just avoid these areas, and if you have to go through there, don't be brown.
Yeah.
But it's bullshit. The whole thing is bullshit. This is literally on par with Nazi Germany policies. And nobody cares to see that, and I'm probably going to get called crazy for it, but give it some time. Looking back on it, it's going to be comparable to Nazi Germany. No shit. It's going to be comparable. It already is. And down the road, people are going to be making that comparison.
Yeah, so let's try to stop it before it gets to that point.
Yeah.
So moving forward with our next article, this was posted by myself on Wednesday, July 24th, and it is, quote, "It was about shaming people. Philly businessman rebuffed in efforts to clear PA schools, kids, an effort to clear PA kids' school lunch debt." Todd Carmichael grew up poor. His family relied on food stamps, and he qualified for free school lunches, something that made him feel ashamed. So when Carmichael, now the CEO of La Colombe Coffee, heard about a northeastern Pennsylvania school district threatening to put a group of students in foster care because their parents hadn't paid their school lunch debts, he had a visceral reaction. He didn't want other children to feel the shame he once did. But school board president Joseph Mazur said no to Carmichael, whose progressive politics have become increasingly high profile. "I am offering to pay this debt in full," Carmichael wrote in a letter addressed to Mazur and published in the Wilkes-Barre Citizen's Voice. Quote, "By saying no, you're not just shaming families who elected you, but you are placing this burden on the WVW taxpayers, and that is completely unfair."
And the thing here, they did this. I believe we covered this last week. They talked about this as though the issue was they weren't getting their money. We already talked about it. They already got their money. The taxes that these people are forced to pay pays for those lunches already. So they are paying to buy it and then paying to use it.
Yeah, it's like that's basically what's happening is, you know, hey, I'll pay you for this thing, and then I have to pay you a second time to gain access to this thing.
Yeah, but the bullshit of this is that they made it up to be as though money was the issue.
Which clearly it wasn't.
Therefore, if money is the issue, it shouldn't matter where that money comes from as long as it gets paid, right? Well, wrong, because this guy offered to pay everything, all of it in full, and got rejected.
Yeah, and I feel like this runs deeper than just shaming people, because we know how kids just get, quote, lost in foster care. It's like, oh, well, we took them from their parents, put them into foster care, and then they just disappeared.
50 kids go into foster care, 10 kids actually make it.
Yeah, and we all know it's human trafficking.
Yeah.
Like, that's what's going on.
To a point of it, a lot of it is human trafficking. That's becoming more and more apparent.
That's how a kid just gets lost. Like, yeah. No, they didn't get lost. They deleted them from the fucking system and then trafficked them.
Yeah, because the kids, they're young. They're not nearly as resourceful as kids used to be. That's the only thing I can say about boomers. Boomers were fucking resourceful. Aside from that, fuck you, boomer. But these kids are young. They're naive. They don't know what's going on. They don't know how to get out of this. And it's easy to traffic them. Don't quote me on that. but it's that is the ultimate threat of foster care. And even then, foster care itself, I've met foster kids. They hate it. They hate living in foster care.
Yeah, and one of the things that really, you know, ties in with that is how, like, even with the Epstein case, we know that he was in bed with a lot of politicians. And
children. He was in bed with a lot of children.
Yeah, and he's being faced with trafficking children. And this man is also in bed with politicians.
Yeah, so he's going to make it out.
It's very, it's easy to see, you know, politicians are, you know, involved with this human trafficker. Like, of course, they're playing a role in this, you know, and what better source of children who are unwanted or don't have family or whatever the case may be than Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
Because these are kids with no strings attached, and it's all too easy for them to just slip out of the system.
Yeah.
And with that, that actually leads us to our ace wild card.
Before we get into that, I just wanted to recap that last article. It is about shaming families. It is not about the money that they claimed it to be about. It is about shaming families and potentially kidnapping children for sexual fornication and such. That's disgusting. Anyway, I just wanted to get that in.
All right, go
to the ace card. We're still doing two wild cards. We have one before the end of the first segment and one at the end of the second segment. So, sorry, go.
Okay. So this one was posted by myself on Thursday, July 25th, and that is Jeffrey Epstein found nearly unconscious in NYC jail cell after possible suicide attempt. Convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein was found in his cell on Tuesday nearly unconscious with injuries to his neck after a possible suicide attempt, sources said. Epstein was discovered by guards sprawled out on the floor at the Metropolitan Correctional Center, where he's been being held without bail on sex trafficking charges, according to law enforcement sources. The multimillionaire financier was taken to a nearby hospital. It's unclear how Epstein suffered his neck injuries, and investigators believe Epstein may have done it to himself on purpose, possibly as a ploy to get transferred out of the jail, sources said. It was also possible that Epstein was attacked by another inmate, the sources added.
I don't know if it was another inmate. It was probably one of the Clintons.
Yeah, like Hillary Clinton herself. Like, she snuck in.
She showed up with a fucking Garrett to fucking kill him.
Yeah, like, and I'm glad that a lot of people saw this, because, like, even when I posted it in Anjo and, like, from other sources that I saw were posting about his alleged attempted suicide.
Totally.
A lot of people were saying, oh, yeah, he was almost suicided.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, because, as I've just said, you know, this man's in bed with politicians, powerful people. They don't want him singing. They don't want his little black book to get out and, you know, basically implicate a lot of these powerful people in his little sex trafficking ring. So, no, I can almost guarantee you this man did not try to commit suicide. He was almost suicided.
Yeah. He was almost killed by the powers that be, because they don't want the caged bird to sing.
No, they do not.
It's easier to cover their asses by killing a man while he's in jail, so you can just blame a random inmate. I had nothing to do with this. It was Bubba over there raped him to death.
Oh yeah, we put him in Gen Pop, and he got stabbed 52 times.
Yeah. Meanwhile, a cop with the same background would be protected at all costs, put in his own special unit specifically for rapists and pedophiles and such.
Yep. Away from Gen Pop.
Yeah, because a cop isn't going to blab on anybody. He's the one that fucked up. But yeah. Epstein, he's got people to blab on, and they're going to try and get rid of him.
Well, yeah, and this is big.
No doubt, he's going to end up in Gen Pop, and no one in there, they may or may not kill him, but someone will.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be an inmate. Someone in there
is... They're going to try to kill him before he can sing.
Yeah, they don't want that kind of information getting out, because they have a face to maintain. They have to look like they are good people, so people will elect them, so they can steal your money.
And so they can maintain their power.
These are the people that run your lives. These are the people who claim to have authority over you and claim to know what's best for you.
And who so many statists believe are just these benevolent, beautiful human beings.
And mind you, Epstein has connections, in as far as this case goes, he has connections with both the Clintons and Donald Trump. So I don't give a shit what side of the statist fence you're on. He's on both.
He's pretty close to Trump.
Yeah, he's got connections on both sides, and he could fuck up both sides. So it doesn't matter what statist you are, this guy is going to wreck your world. Now, I don't like him very much at all, simply on the case that he's kind of a super pedophile and runs a pedophile sex island. That's fucked up. I don't like that. But it is nice to watch politicians squirm with fear.
It really is.
It's a beautiful thing.
I just hope something comes of it.
Right? So anyhow, that wraps up the first segment of the reformat. I'm glad we're doing the wild cards the way we are now, with one at the end of each segment. That's fucking dope.
Oh yeah.
So we're gonna take a quick break, and we will be right back into it.
All right. Anyway, we got the bullshit. We'll get to the show. Well, actually, hold on. First, a little more bullshit. How are you? How's things over there?
Extremely tired.
Oh. Oh. You poor man. That's sad.
All right, and we are back.
Fueled up with coffee and regret and shame.
Yes, yes. We're back to get back into it with our first ninth article?
Yeah, this will be our ninth article.
Ninth article! Our first ninth article. Let's do it.
All right, so this one's posted by Jason Booth on Tuesday, July 23rd. Headline is, internal documents show why the NYPD tried to be funny online. Now, this does seem like a little bit of a joking headline, but it's actually not. It runs pretty deep.
Yeah.
But
they don't have to be funny online. They're funny in real life. I mean, They're hilarious. Just watching them try to do basic human stuff.
No, they can't.
It's laughable at best.
Yeah. So documents obtained by Motherboard show that NYPD social media officers are explicitly instructed to, quote, be funny in order to, quote, build trust on official social media channels. On July 17th, 2014, the New York Police Department put Staten Island resident Eric Garner into a chokehold while apprehending him for allegedly selling cigarettes illegally. Garner told the police, quote, I can't breathe, 11 times before losing consciousness. Officers did not perform CPR on Garner, and neither did EMT when they arrived at the scene. Garner was pronounced dead in the hospital about an hour after the incident. This week, exactly 5 years after Garner's death, Mayor Bill de Blasio doubled down on his decision to not fire Officer Daniel Pantelio, who placed Garner in a chokehold.
Which is bullshit, if you ask me.
Yeah. Pantelio will also not be held criminally liable.
Also bullshit.
The decision ignores repeated demands for justice from local residents and activists who have organized both in person and in mass on social media. That same day, the NYPD Twitter account tweeted about World Emoji Day. Motherboard has obtained and is publishing an internal guide that may help explain the strategy behind that tweet and the NYPD's social media presence across platforms. Police are explicitly told to, quote, be funny by cracking jokes and using emojis, and to take, quote, victory laps by sharing evidence of arrests and confiscations. We know how well that goes.
Ugh.
The documents note that the goal of NYPD's social media accounts is to, quote, build and maintain trust between the department and the communities it serves. So you kind of see where they're going with this. They're trying to appear as friendly, personable people, and they...
Well, the thing is, Spider-Man is funny.
Mm-hmm.
He's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's out there fighting crime, doing good, like actual crime. Yeah. Like he's Spider-Man fights actual crime, and he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, he's relatable. He's a guy you can like. It's a guy that you want to cheer on when he's taking down the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
The cops are literally pulling from comic book shit, where they try to be funny and relatable, and you can like them. And oh, and here we are fighting crime.
That's what they're supposed to, that's what they're trying to do is, you know, shift the viewpoint of away from police brutality, away from the horrible things that they do. Like, oh, look at how funny and relatable we are. It's like, no, you're not relatable. Like, you get your kicks off of putting the heel of your boot on your fellow working class man's throat.
Yeah,
like, you're not relatable. You're a piece of trash.
You're a class traitor at best.
Yeah.
But they're trying to, it's a subliminal control thing,
mm-hmm.
because they're still doing the same asshole cop shit that they always do, but now they're trying to appease you. They're trying to appeal to your humor. They're trying to be, you know, hey, I'm just a normal guy. You're not normal. Normal people don't sign up for this job.
No.
Normal people don't think it's okay to choke a man to death with what is allegedly an illegal chokehold.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize chokeholds were illegal. I probably have some things I need to go clean up. But an illegal chokehold. They are instructed not to use this chokehold, did it anyways, and killed a man.
And
after,
of course, he's not criminally liable.
No. So that makes them... That makes people see the true side of cops, where they'll do anything and everything to fight crime.
He broke protocol, killed someone because he broke protocol, and got away scot-free.
Yeah. So now they're trying to make this kind of behavior seem more okay and acceptable by, well, he's a funny guy,
like,
so...
Oh, haha, look at this cop holding a kitten. Ah, haha, look at this cop playing basketball with the youth. It's like, no, like, stop trying to detract from the horrible fucking things that these people do.
The main thing I can say about this, it didn't work for Bill Cosby.
No.
Bill Cosby was goddamn hilarious.
He was like one of the kings of comedy, and he got brought the fuck down.
Yeah, it didn't work for Bill Cosby. It's not going to work for a bunch of cops.
No.
Fuck the police. I'm not going to laugh with them. I will laugh at them. They are scumbags. They all deserve to die. If you're a cop listening to this, please get your gun and kill yourself. Like, seriously, kill yourself.
For legal reasons, that is a joke.
Ha! I can be funny online, too!
So, moving forward, this next one was posted by Ryan Bauer on Tuesday, July 23rd. And this follows in line with the last one. This is, NYPD cops get drenched by buckets of water.
Again, laughing at them, not with them.
This is them actually being funny.
Yeah.
So the article says, stunning videos posted online Monday show uniformed NYPD cops getting drenched with buckets of water by brazen young men in Harlem and Brooklyn, law enforcement sources told the Post. One clip even shows a soaked cop getting beamed in the back of the head with an empty bucket or an empty red plastic bucket while the cop and his partner were handcuffing a suspect on the hood of a black car.
Now see,
so like he just added injury to insult. Like it's just like, oh, I just dumped water on you. Now just like take this bucket to the back of the head.
Get hurt, bitch. Now I can say I did watch some of these videos with a little bit of lotion and tissue paper. It was a good time, made me happy. We need more of this. I want to escalate it from buckets of water to...
No, you don't. You don't want to escalate it for FBI reasons.
We do not want this to escalate to tar and feathering. That would be wrong.
That would be horrible.
We do not want to tar and feather the police.
No, we do not. We specifically do not.
But they are trying to be funnier online, and a tar chicken man... That's pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. I mean,
if the cops are going to tar and feather themselves, I mean, yeah, that's relatable.
I'd watch.
That's relatable. I can watch that. I'll laugh at that.
So moving on before James gets himself another visit from the FBI.
Yo, fuck the police, though.
This next one was posted by Jason Booth on Sunday, July 21st. This one's a bit of a funny. But, I mean, I can kind of see where they're coming from. Like, it's an initiative.
Yeah.
But a reusable to-go cup loan service coming to Berkeley this year.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
The city of Berkeley will launch a reusable cup loan service later this year to reduce foodware waste, the Berkeley-based nonprofit The Ecology Center announced. Select businesses on the University of California at Berkeley campus and in the Telegraph Avenue area in South Berkeley will partner with Vessel, a reusable to-go cup service based in Boulder, Colorado, starting in mid-September, according to the Ecology Center.
Now, see, I do think it's funny that they're a nonprofit, so at least they know what to expect.
Yeah, they're not going to get anything. Vessel provides stainless steel cups with silicone lids to participating customers through an online app and a system that resembles bike sharing and library book loaning. Customers check out Vessel cups by scanning a code on the cup with their phone's camera. When they are done, they can return the cup to any participating business within 5 days or else face a fine.
Now, wait a second. Did you say bike sharing and book loaning?
Yeah.
And they're throwing in coffee cups. You can effectively rent a hipster.
Yeah, this is local rent a hipster.
This is great. Shit, keep going.
The dirty cups are then picked up by Vessel via a bicycle pedicab, washed, and returned to cafes and restaurants for reuse, according to the Ecology Center.
Gross.
So this is where it gets kind of shitty.
Oh, no. This is where it gets shitty?
This is where it gets shitty.
Oh, fuck.
The pilot program follows the Single-Use Disposable Foodware and Litter Reduction Ordinance, which was recently passed in the city. The first phase of the ordinance, which went into effect in March, limits the kinds of disposable foodware items that businesses can provide. The second phase, effective January 1st of 2020, requires vendors to supply exclusively compostable items and to charge a 25-cent fee for each disposable cup they provide, according to the city. So what I can see from this is the government's about to prop up another monopoly.
Yeah.
So Vessel's stepping in to provide these reusable cups. Like, I get it, you know, good initiative. Like, that's awesome, trying to cut down on waste and everything.
Yeah.
They're using durable materials that can be reused for a while. Like, good on you. But the problem is the city's about to make this mandatory.
Yeah. They're going to make it mandatory, and this company is getting in early, so there won't be any competition. They're going to get in early before anybody else gets on this mandatory bandwagon. And by the time that mandate goes through, they're going to be the only ones, and no one else is going to have a chance to get a break in, therefore causing yet another government-enforced monopoly.
Yeah, and that's the thing about this article, is like it starts out, it's like, okay, this is cool, it's a nonprofit trying to, you know, work for a good cause, but then it completely makes a 180, and it's like, oh yeah, it's to fall in line with the city ordinance that's going to go through, that's going to fine people for actually giving out, you know, disposable cups.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, the government's taking a good thing and turning it into a bad thing. Can we just for once, you know, focus on educating people instead of trying to force them to do something?
And see, this, the way this should be handled instead of mandating that you stop putting out disposable items and now it has to be compostable or reusable, instead of mandating that, they could just let Vessel give it a shot, you know, give it the good old Berklee College try. And
you know, Berklee's full of hipsters and environmentalists, chances are they're going to be fine. Like, they don't need government ordinance to support this.
Yeah, good ideas don't require force.
No.
And if this
is a good idea, I think it is. But
debatably, because this is a loaning service, so once you're done with it, it gets sent back. God knows what they do to sterilize it, if anything. You might get AIDS because it's no longer mandatory that if you have in California,
Well, that's how word of mouth travels, though. I mean,
how AIDS travels is through your mouth.
If somebody gets AIDS from a Vessel cup, you can be guaranteed Vessel's going to go out of business pretty damn quickly.
Exactly,
which is why you don't need the government's intervention.
It'll be mandatory. That's the bad thing. It'll be mandatory, and if people are out here catching I wouldn't necessarily say AIDS. It probably takes more to catch AIDS, but there are going to be small things like fucking herpes. There's going to be little things that people will catch, and if it's mandatory, you're now mandating that people will probably catch herpes.
And also, you have to think as well, you know, when it comes to things like that, restaurants already reuse glasses and cups as it is. This isn't much different than that. I mean, I'm sure that you've used a glass that somebody with oral herpes has used, but you're fine because they clean it.
So long as
Vessel is actually, you know, managing to sanitize these, it shouldn't be a problem.
As long as they are properly sterilizing these cups, it should be okay. But I'd still feel a little weird renting a cup. Like of all things to rent,
I think
cup?
The only thing that would be off-putting is having to go out of my way. Like say I go, you know, drop by a Starbucks, pick up a coffee in one of these rentable cups. And then, like, after I'm done with my coffee, instead of tossing it in the trash, I have to go out of my way to go to somewhere that, you know, is partnered with Vessel and then drop the cup off. Like, that would be the only thing that's a little off-putting, is having to find somewhere to deposit the cup. Because
that's not a garbage can.
If you're actually going to be viably using this thing, it's because you're on the go. So it's like, okay, I have 5 days to find somewhere to fucking drop this thing off. And, like, if there's nowhere along my way, then I have to go out of my way to drop off this fucking cup.
If they're forcing me to use a rental cup, I'm going to hold it hostage.
Well, that's when the fine comes in.
Try and collect those late fees. I'm going to pay cash so you don't have a connection to my bank. And I'm going to start stacking
these. Well, that's the thing is you have to scan in the cup with your phone.
Gay.
Yep, that way you...
Damn it, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
I would rather start stockpiling these things and hold them hostage. Like, you either
that
pay
makes
me
think of the fucking it was the alternative to the parking boot. It was or the wheel boot, like where they put the thing on your windshield.
Yeah,
and like if you tried to move, it would start screaming at you.
Fortunately, I drive a Jeep. I can just fold the windshield down, and the thing is so loud I wouldn't hear it screaming at me anyway. Like, I don't care. And then I can take my windshield off later. Suck my dick.
All right, so before we diverge too far, this isn't the rabbit hole. This one was posted by Jason Booth on Saturday, July 20th. And this is, court rules Seattle can impose an income tax in stunning decision.
My ass!
And this
tax
is,
this dick, motherfucker.
This is a big thing because, you know, Washington is one of the few states that does not impose an income tax. So this is a bit of a big deal. But the Washington State Court of Appeals handed down a shocking decision Monday, ruling that the city of Seattle has the legal authority to impose an income tax. It was roughly 2 years ago when Seattle City Council unanimously passed an income tax on high earners. But the 2.25% tax on total income above $250,000 for individuals and $500,000 for married couples has yet to be imposed. A legal battle has ensued ever since over the fact that Washington is one of the few states that doesn't impose an income tax. Monday's ruling called that restriction into question. The appeals court ruled that while the tax levied against high earners by the city of Seattle is unconstitutional, the city still has the authority to impose an income tax, provided it's uniform across all tax brackets. Essentially, if Seattle or any city in Washington wants an income tax, it would need to be applied evenly across every household, regardless of what they make yearly. So basically what they're saying is, you know, we can impose an income tax so long as everybody's getting equally fucked. And what that is, that's an attack on the poor. Because, like, if you put a 5% tax on everybody, the rich aren't going to feel that. The poor are going to fucking feel that.
Yeah.
And you know that every time that they impose a new tax, it's like, oh, it's to help the needy. It's to help the poor. It's to build infrastructure. No. You're like, me personally, if I didn't get taxed out the ass every fucking pay period, I'd be living pretty damn comfortably.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't have to get 20 hours of overtime every fucking pay period so that I could actually put back some money. I could actually afford to shave off 10 or 15 of that to be able to live.
Yeah.
But no, like, they want to take a big-ass chunk out of my check every fucking 2 weeks and act as if it's under the guise of helping people like me. Because I'm in the lower class. I make 35 grand a year with my overtime.
Yeah.
Like, I'm lower class. Like, you're hurting me. You're not helping me. I'm not on welfare. I'm not on food stamps. I'm not doing any of that shit. You're just fucking hurting me. So with this bullshit, that's all it is. It's just another fucking tax, another attack on the poor.
It's because the big thing here is, while the tax is a percentage and therefore a variable per income, if you make $1,000 and 5% of it is taxed, that's $50 you're losing.
Mm-hmm.
You make $100,000, you lose what, $5,000?
Sure, let's go with that math. Yeah. I'm tired.
Yeah, but the thing is, the cost of living doesn't inherently change. If you're going on just basic stuff, for general food, say someone with a high income is living a very frugal lifestyle, he has a comparatively low cost of living. Whereas a poor person trying to live that same lifestyle, they'll be paying the same price. It's just one of them has more money to pay that with, and a 5% tax isn't going to hurt him nearly as much as it's going to hurt the little guy.
No, it's not.
Because for one, the rich guy is paying a lower percentage of his income for general living, and the other guy, the poorer person, is paying a higher percentage of his income. Mm-hmm. So a 5% tax is going to hurt him a lot more than it's going to hurt the rich guy.
Yeah, and the thing is, that money is not going to be funneled back to the individual that's being hurt.
Yeah.
Like, all it's going to do is line... Like, I can almost guarantee you that if they fucking pass this tax, you know, government in Seattle is probably going to get a little pay raise.
More than likely, yeah.
That's what this shit goes to. I mean, like, they say, oh, but my roads. It's like,
you still have roads.
Have you ever seen state-maintained roads? They're fucking garbage.
They are.
They're absolute garbage. And, like, just, like, in Savannah, I-16, they maintain it pretty well. But here's the issue with I-16. It is a very fucking popular interstate in this place. It needs a third lane. It needs to be the next 95.
Yeah.
They're not fucking funneling that tax money into it, though.
No.
Like, they're pulling how much fucking money in taxes, and they can't afford to add an extra lane to that interstate?
I know,
like,
a lot of it.
Just over, like, a maybe 10 to 15, like, really a 10-mile stretch is all you would need.
And I know a lot of it is being burned on election campaigns and shit, whether it's a mayoral campaign or a, I hate the word, gubernatorial campaign. But they burn it all on election campaigns. It's a bunch of shit.
Well, then you also know that the was it specifically the mechanical department that had the $10 million surplus?
No, it was the whole city of Savannah had a $10 million dollar surplus, and they started
got a raise.
Every single cop that had been there for at least a year got a promotion, not a raise, a promotion, and
which it comes
therefore,
with a raise.
Yeah.
And then they were just giving raises across the board in all the departments and everything. It's like, you couldn't have put that money into something that, oh, I don't know, the citizens of Savannah could have fucking used, like,
right?
Another lane on I-16, you cunts.
That'd be nice.
Have you seen traffic going into Savannah in the morning? It's fucking horrible.
But this tax, the bullshit of it is, as long as you have taxes on this kind of stuff, all it does to most people, because most people aren't in the 1%, actually about 99% of people aren't in the 1%.
Well, really?
But what it does to most people, you're not living, you're surviving.
Yeah.
And imposing more tax is going to make that harder.
Oh, but don't worry, it's for your betterment.
Right, yeah, totally.
So moving forward, this next article is posted by Jason Booth on Friday, July 26th. The title is, or the headline, 106-year-old woman might lose her house because she's behind on property taxes. So a 106-year-old woman is facing a tax sale on her home because she is behind on her property tax payments. Rose Estwanick has lived in the Cranford Colonial since it was built in 1943. Her daughter, Roseanne Estwinick. Estwinick.
It's a hell of a
67,
name.
Started a GoFundMe page earlier this month to raise $12,000 to pay down a $12,376 property tax balance from 2018 and 2019.
Again, making it less of living and more of surviving.
Yeah, like that's a chunk of money. That's $1,000 a month.
That's a bunch.
Just property tax. Like, fuck. So they need to raise a minimum of $8,400 to avoid being part of a tax sale in September. Roseanne has been providing round-the-clock care for her mother since losing her job in 2011. Rose has dementia, is a 30-year breast cancer survivor, has AFib, which is an irregular heartbeat, and severe arthritis in both knees. So, like, this woman, if she did lose her house, she couldn't relocate. Like,
yeah.
It would kill her.
She would end up being the crazy old lady pushing a shopping cart under an interstate
overpass. She wouldn't even survive that long.
No.
Like, the thing about older people is, like, you can't relocate them. Like, it puts too much stress on their body and mind, and it will kill them.
Yeah.
Like, that is a thing. Like, once somebody reaches a certain age, especially, like, she has dementia.
106. I'm pretty sure she's past a certain age.
Yeah, like, she has AFib and she has dementia. Like, she can't move, but the government doesn't give a fuck. But thankfully, as of me writing out my little document for the show, the GoFundMe has raised $18,151 as of today. So she's safe.
We get a nice little wholesome spin.
Yeah, thanks to voluntary and charitable actions of others, she's fine.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show, you don't need the government. People will fucking chip in and help. They see a cause that they relate with or that they care about, that they want to help with. And like when you go to these GoFundMe pages, you'll see it's just like little donations, $10, $15,
$20, $5. But there's a lot of people on board with that.
But when you get like even 500 people donating $20, that shit stacks up.
Yeah.
Like you get a lot of money really fucking quick. And like GoFundMe and similar sites are like perfect to show voluntary action works.
So this follows a flowchart. Is it important to you? If it is, are you willing to fund it voluntarily without having the money stolen from you? Yeah.
It's important. Then it will be paid for.
It'll be paid for. If it's important enough that you'll pay for it, there's more than likely other people that'll pay for it. You'll all get together, you all pay for it, and sure enough, this woman is more than okay right now. All of the alleged back taxes that she allegedly owes, it's all paid off, and she has enough to support her for a while now.
Mm-hmm. So she's good. Doing good.
That's a fun article because it's got two spins on it. A, fuck the government, and B, God bless good people. Holy fuck.
God bless volunteerism.
Holy fuck. I love people.
All right, so moving forward. This one was posted by Jason Booth on Saturday, July 20th, and it is West Palm uses music to move homeless from Waterfront Pavilion. Another attack on the homeless. The city is playing torturous sound loops of children's songs overnight to keep people from lying about the patio of the city's Lake Pavilion.
Why would you lie about the patio? It's definitely there, isn't it?
Yes.
Fuck, it was a fantasy the whole time.
'Twas a farce. The city of West Palm Beach has launched a music offensive, too, playing torturous sound loops all night long of the children's songs Raining Tacos and Baby Shark to keep the homeless from lying about the patio of the city's Lake Pavilion.
Okay, I haven't heard Raining Tacos, but Baby Shark is definitely enough to keep my ass away from there. Fuck West Palm Beach.
So, sensitive to the optics of playing music to drive people away, city officials pointed out that West Palm Beach and several nonprofits are working on many humane fronts to attack homelessness, from building subsidized housing to sending engagement teams to hook up the willing with mental health services, job training, and other programs, and giving the homeless one-way bus tickets back to their hometowns. That's not a... It's like, basically, get the fuck out of my city.
He's homeless. Yeah. His hometown doesn't imply that there is a home there.
It's like the city of fuck, or like that episode of South Park where like they're just trying to send all the homeless from one place to another.
But go be homeless somewhere else. Our homelessness rate went down because we got rid of homeless people.
Yeah, and it continues. But solving a problem as complex as homelessness takes time, and the Lake Pavilion has a more immediate concern. Rockwell says. The city is working on a plan to formalize opening and closing hours for the park to make easily enforcing to more easily enforce trespassing laws. But meanwhile, she says the music is working.
Yeah,
and you know, I love how they try to virtue signal with this. It's like, okay, yeah, we get it that we're driving away, but look at these good things we're doing. It's like, no, fuck off. Like, you're still targeting homeless people instead of helping them. Like,
you took one step forward and two steps back.
Yeah, like, you don't need to attack them. Like, help them.
They're already down on their
luck.
It's like,
I don't care that the Lake Pavilion has a more immediate concern. Like, the immediate fucking concern is this person is homeless and you'd rather attack them than help them.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the helping is taking too long terms. We just, like, you know, attacking them is just faster. Let's do that.
They're only worried about themselves. Yeah. They're not worried about helping the homeless people. They're worried about getting rid of these nasty, filthy hobos so we look cleaner. No, fuck you.
Yeah, fuck off. Like, I cannot stand the government hatred of homeless. Like, stop doing that. Just fucking help them. Like,
God forbid you're homeless and Mexican.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be homeless in Mexico. So, the next article is posted by Ryan Bauer on Sunday, July 21st. And the headline is, Bill would make Massachusetts the first in U.S. to ban flavored tobacco products.
Yo, fuck Bill.
Yeah, Bill is a bitch.
Fuck this Bill guy.
So, 1 year after concluding a successful campaign to raise the minimum age for buying tobacco from 18 to 21 across Massachusetts, anti-smoking advocates are now zeroing in on flavored tobacco products like those popular with electronic cigarette users. Let's just take a moment to say that, you know, vaping is not a fucking tobacco product. It has nicotine, but that's about the only fucking similarity.
Yeah,
tobacco is not used in the creation of vape juices.
Not even in the tobacco-flavored ones, which sucks because they don't taste anything like tobacco.
Yeah, and there are also a lot of juices that use tomato-based nicotine.
Yeah,
so
because tomatoes have nicotine in them.
So, invoking comparisons to the, quote, Joe Camel campaign that critics accused R.J. Reynolds of using to entice young smokers in the past, supporters of the bill claim the flavor pods have been aggressively marketed to minors by the industry, helping to fuel a surge of adolescent vaping that the higher legal age for tobacco purchases has so far done little to abate. Opponents of the ban include the New England Convenience Store and Energy Marketers Association, which contends that retailers are being made scapegoats for the youth vaping epidemic, even while most stores in the region have strong records of enforcing customer age restrictions. So, here's the thing. Like, I didn't include it in here, but earlier in the article it did say that the amount of underage vapers has doubled since, like, I think it was last year. But, you know, the thing is that when you actually put that in comparison to how many people smoke cigarettes at that age.
Yeah.
Like, when I was in high school, you know, of course, like, we were all aged 14 to 18. Like, so a lot of, like, the vast majority of them were not old enough to buy and smoke cigarettes. A lot of people bought and smoked cigarettes. Like, if I wanted cigarettes, I knew who to go to get them.
Shit. Like, when I was in high school, we were all out drinking and having fun.
Yeah, so...
They were way far away from being able to legally purchase alcohol.
So, like, they're trying to paint this as, like, oh, the amount of people vaping has, like, significantly increased. Like, it's like, okay, and? Like, I'd rather them be vaping than smoking cigarettes, because if they have been impressed enough to the point where they will vape... If the vape wasn't there, chances are they would have smoked cigarettes anyways.
Yeah. Because, or worse, they'd be smoking that devil's lettuce.
Yeah. Yeah, but underage smoking is very, very common. Like, extremely common. But you don't see the tobacco industry getting the same flack that the vape industry is.
No.
And that's because...
Well, technically, because this is, you know, they said flavored tobacco products. They're not targeting flavored tobacco. It's tobacco products. Therefore, products of the tobacco industry.
Even though vape is the vape industry, not the tobacco industry. But the government likes to lump those two together.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of big tobacco corporations have a hand in a lot of big vape companies.
Yes, because they finally realize that they can't just outright get it banned because it's too popular. So now they're just trying to stick their greedy hands into it.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious because they're the ones that called for all the regulations and funded all the regulations. And it's like, heh, now you're sticking your hands into, like, you're putting your dick right into a heavily regulated market where, I mean, I shit you not. I get most of my vape shit online. But every time I go to a vape shop, like a local one, like I just went the other day, and like one of the first things I asked them is like, so what new FDA regulations you got? And of course there's a new one. Like every time I go into a store, there's a new fucking FDA regulation against it. So, yeah, it's horseshit. Like, the attack on vaping is ridiculous. It's not healthy, but it is far healthier than smoking.
Oh yeah.
And like it'll actually allow your lungs to heal. Yeah. Like if you swap from tobacco products, like actual tobacco products, to vapes, your lungs can actually heal. So the attack on it is just ridiculous, and it's another just government overstep.
Telling you what you can and can't put in your body when they
nanny
have
a state.
They have absolutely no say in the matter. It's my body, my choice.
Yep. So that wraps up our normal articles. So what we got next is our wild card joker. And this one was posted by Calvin Smith on Thursday, July 25th. This is a funny one. Trump duped into speaking in front of fake presidential seal, calling him a puppet. On Tuesday, President Trump appeared before the Turning Point USA Student Summit, the conservative campus free speech group populated by the kind of budding Alex P. Keatons who carry briefcases to school. The president's speech was his typical off-script soliloquy, where he encourages the sympathetic crowd to deride the, quote, fake news and unloads on political enemies, both real and imagined. What set this appearance apart, aside from the bizarre 12-minute sizzle reel, which reportedly boasted about the president's prowess with women, was the presidential seal projected behind Trump. Instead of the standard presidential seal, the one behind Trump contained a set of golf clubs, a two-headed eagle lifted from the Russian coat of arms, and the Spanish phrase, 45 es un titere, which translates to 45 is a puppet. According to the Washington Post, no one can figure out how the switch happened. In quote, it was a last-minute AV mistake, and I can't figure out where the breakdown was, but it was a last-minute throw-up, and that's all it was.
Oh, it was a throw-up, all right.
That's, yeah. A Turning Point rep told the Post. I can't figure out who did it yet. I don't know where they got the image from. An update to the article said, a Turning Point rep told Washington Post that a member of the video team had been let go over the snafu. Quote, we did let the individual go, the spokesman told the Post. Quote, I don't think it was malicious intent, but nevertheless. The flack added that the mix-up was, quote, unacceptable, and chalked it up to a rushed image search conducted right before the president took the stage. This is fucking funny.
That's...
Like, just the description
They've got NYPD beat.
It's like, instead of the... It contained a set of golf clubs, a two-headed eagle lifted from the Russian coat of arms, and a phrase that translates to 45 is a puppet. That's fucking beautiful.
And they rolled with it. Like, they didn't even care. They just went with it.
They probably didn't even notice until it was too late.
Right? I love that. That is beautiful. That is the only thing that makes me happy to live in this world right now is that happened, and it's fucking hilarious.
It is fucking funny. Like, I am so happy that this happened. I mean, well, on one hand, it sucks that, you know, one of their AV team got let go. On the other hand, they were a fucking conservative, so whatever. But right? This shit was fucking hilarious.
That's awesome.
Thank you for your fuck up. I wish it wasn't. I wish this was intentional. That would just make it better.
Yes. If so, thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service. Like, that's the person that deserves to be thanked for their service.
Oh man.
My gosh. All right, guys. So that wraps up episode this of Anjo Weekend of... It is 12:39 at night, and I'm fucking tired, despite the cup of coffee I drink. But
so we're adequately off schedule. We are perfectly off schedule. We were hoping for a Saturday release. This is going to be a Sunday, because we're almost an hour into
it. We recorded half of it on Saturday, though.
We tried.
The first half was from about 11 to 11:30.
It wouldn't be the same if we weren't off schedule. So, that's
going to
wrap.
We can't go on schedule at this point.
No,
they're too used to it.
No.
Like, so, that would just be, like, people don't like change. We have to be off schedule. It's an obligation.
Yeah. So I was going to wrap this up. Just bear in mind, the next episode being down the rabbit hole this, hopefully, Wednesday, if we don't fuck anything up.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. The next episode of Down the Rabbit Hole, I will be out of town, and it's going to make it another long-distance hollapalooza.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
It's going to suck.
I tell you guys, last week in Anjo was not fucking easy.
Like, it was not okay.
I'm surprised, because we only did 9 articles, and it was still 45 fucking minutes.
It still took a while.
I mean, this one's going to be a little over an hour, and we covered 16.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. Just keep in mind, this coming episode of Down the Rabbit Hole will be long distance, so it might be a little choppy, a little fucky. But next week's Week in Anjo will be all good to go, considering we'll be back sitting next to each other again by then.
Yeah. In the meantime, I only have Saturday to fuck Sam's brains out before I leave Monday. So we're going to go ahead and cut the episode to a close and go get our sex on.
The 11-hour sex rampage hullapalooza begins now.
Yes. No homo, though. No homo.
No, it's only gay if the balls touch.
Yeah.